One of the most surprising discoveries I have found in church history that Christians usually did not realize or recognize the effects their actions had when they heeded Christ's words, "Let your light so shine before men that they might see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven."
Dr. Alvin Schmidt speaking at this year's Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Their actions were byproducts of God's redeeming love that was theirs in the crucified and risen life of Jesus Christ. In time, many Christian values and practices became integrated parts of Western culture. And the Christians didn't really quite realize it, as we don't to this day.
You can listen to Dr. Schmidt's presentation, Making the Case for Christianity's Positive Impact on Civilization, on our new audio DVD from the Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300. For more information, look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Oh, golly, since the last time we talked with Terry Mattingly, a question has been rolling around in my head, and Terry actually put it there. We were talking with him about the Supreme Court decision, I believe, recent Supreme Court decision on Hobby Lobby, and he said, what do you call a group of people who are not so hot on the First Amendment, not so hot on religious freedom or freedom of speech? And he said, I wouldn't call them liberal, but he didn't know what to call them. And that question has been stuck in my mind for the better part of 10 days or so. And now, a question raised by an essay in The Atlantic by Alan Noble kind of spins off of that. It's actually two subtly different questions. Is evangelical morality still acceptable in America? Is it still viable in American public life? The acceptable versus viable distinction is pretty important there, but I wonder, are those the right questions to be asking? Joining us to talk about this Atlantic Monthly essay about evangelical morality, Terry Mattingly, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Good to talk to you again. Glad to know I've been haunting you for a week or two.
You often do. Alan Noble asked this question in the Atlantic Monthly, and the headline is evangelical morality still acceptable? He begins by saying, is evangelical Christian morality still viable in American public life? Are those the right questions?
Well, in one level, it is the right question, except he's got one fact terribly, terribly, stunningly, awesomely wrong. Why does he think this is a matter of evangelical doctrine or theology? Why does he think that it's an evangelical issue whether certain forms of birth control are or are not abortion-inducing? Why does he think that's an evangelical issue? The piece I wrote about this essay at Get Religion opened with what for many, many journalists was the first sign of the coming religious liberty storm, which was a piece a decade ago almost in the Weekly Standard called Banned in Boston. And Banned in Boston concerned the fact that the Catholic agency in Massachusetts that does or used to do adoptions is no longer able to do adoptions in Massachusetts because of a conflict with same-sex marriage, the fact that they don't want to place children into homes that have same-gender couples as the parents. Well, is that a uniquely Catholic issue? Well, on one level, yes, but on another level, no. I mean, obviously, we have seen evangelicals wrestling with similar issues. You can dig back and find a famous case at Yale University where an Orthodox Jewish student didn't want to be put into a mixed gender dorm and said, you know, this violates my religious convictions as an Orthodox Jew. This is a violation of my religious liberty. Well, that one pivoted on the fact that it was a private school. But, I mean, you can find situations involving Mormons. You can find situations involving traditional Muslims. There are a lot of different religious liberty concerns brewing out there. Why in the world did the Atlantic Monthly print an entire essay asking whether evangelical morality is still viable in America, when that is just far too narrow a question. The question is whether any of these ancient or conservative traditional moral worldviews are going to be legally viable, in which evangelicalism is just, you know, one sample. I really do not know what they were thinking.
Okay, you propose you suggest a reason, maybe not in particular for Alan Noble,
yeah,
but for
yeah, yeah.
others who look at it this way, and he's just reflecting kind of the common view
yeah.
of many in journalism. You say it's because these journalists really do think that the whole quote-unquote religious liberty thing is just about this segment of the population that they have already pigeonholed, those evangelicals.
Yeah, this weird little camp of people in the Bible Belt that are really strange and are really living off in their own little niche culture, which, by the way, may be right in some ways, tragically speaking, but as if the little sisters of the poor are somehow an expression of evangelical subculture, as if Mennonites are somehow an expression of evangelical subculture, as if Orthodox Jews are somehow evangelicals. It's a real puzzlement, but I hear what you're saying, and I did write that in the article. I do think there are a lot of journalists who really do think this has something to do with the religious right, and it has everything to do with politics, and it doesn't actually have anything to do with a debate involving free speech, freedom of association, and religious liberty, and which there are liberals who are concerned about the current trends, as well as a wide variety of religious conservatives. They've got it pigeonholed, and we've got to challenge that pigeonhole for journalistic reasons right now, or the coverage is going to just continue to go down this track.
I want to pick up on that, because that was that question that I said had been haunting me. You know, what do you call someone who is not that interested when it comes to these issues that have been so much in the fore, not that interested in free speech or freedom of religion? What do you call them? Now, you said liberals are and should be. Why is that also being missed? That actually, traditionally, liberals would have said, let's go to the wall with free speech and religious liberty.
Exactly. And this has all changed so fast. I mean, you flash back to the Clinton-Gore years when you had a White House that was thoroughly committed to the very concepts and the very law that Democrats in the Senate just tried to overturn, crucial elements of that are a part of Hobby Lobby. And you were dealing with legislation that passed with only like 3 votes of opposition. So something has changed really quick. In an interesting way, this actually relates to the column I wrote for Universal this week, which is about a new political typology that has come out from the Pew Forum Research Center. And it found that the modern Democratic Party is made up of 3 primary groups. One they just call solidly liberal. The other is the young emerging left. And the third is called faith and family left. And the difference between this group of liberals and the others is completely related to their views of social issues and their views of the importance of religion in American life and in family life. And the differences are stark and stunning. The best one is they asked kind of one of those boilerplate questions. Do you think someone has to be religious to live a moral life? Do you have to believe in God to live a moral life? On the solid left, it was like 9% agreed. On another part, like 7% agreed. And 91% of the faith and family left agreed. 91 versus like 7. But what do we know about the faith and family left? They're very pro-marriage. They believe that having children is important. They're ethnically diverse. They're overwhelmingly African-American, Latino, and Catholic/white evangelical Protestant. But it's the most racially diverse segment of any political coalition in America, and it's just as large a part of the Democrat coalition as the traditional left.
So we're not... What you're saying here is that the media coverage of religion here, as it stands, is missing something. Pew's discovered it because they run the numbers. But right. they're missing something enormous in American social life.
Think of it this way. How in the world would you come up with a definition of conservative that would apply it to Dorothy Day, the late Governor Bill Casey of Pennsylvania, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, Joe Lieberman? Now, some of those last two guys were beginning to liberalize on some social issues, but they were still more culturally conservative. How do you call those kinds of people conservatives? Well, the only way you can do it is if the only issues in American life that matter are issues of sexual morality and the sexual liberation. The one of the experts related to Pew, John Green of Akron, who's currently not working at Pew, but he's still highly connected with them as a fellow. John Green made a simple observation that we have two moral viewpoints in the world today and in this Democratic Party coalition. One is extremely modern, and all of its views are rooted in a radical individualism. He said the opposing type of liberalism is the old liberalism, which was based in defense of tradition, communitarian values, and help for the poor, help for the downcast, whatever. He said that form of liberalism still exists, but it's now being drowned out by what is in effect a moral libertarianism, both among moderate Republicans, young Democrats, and true secular-oriented liberal Democrats.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about this, thoughts sparked by an Atlantic Monthly essay about evangelical morality, asking the question, is evangelical morality still acceptable in America? What's the lesson that the media need learn now? If these things are true, what do they need to know to accurately cover all of these issues? We'll answer that question right after this. We talk to the biggest names in religion today, liberal bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took five loaves and two fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Whether building a new home, remodeling an existing home, or tackling the weekend project, it is important to have the materials and advice needed to get the job done. RP Lumber offers estimates for professional building materials and services for drywall, decking, siding, shingles, cabinets, and kitchen and bath design to the general contractor and the individual homeowner. Delivery available with over 50 local community locations. For 37 years, RP Lumber.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about an Atlantic Monthly essay about evangelical morality. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, author of the weekly On Religion column for Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, we're not talking about terribly subtle things, but we are talking about a willingness on the part of members of the media to lay aside preconceived notions, one which has been pretty starkly exposed by Alan Noble's Atlantic Monthly essay. Mm-hmm. If you had him in the room for a little seminar to try and correct this problem, and you had Alan Noble sitting in the front chair, what would you say to a group of journalists?
Well, first of all, the Alan Noble article, the reason I recommended it to readers is it still has a lot of very valid material in it. And it is important to realize the degree to which evangelicalism itself may be marginalized or whatever. It's just he thinks the problem is way narrower than the problem actually is because it applies to so many other faith groups. We're all waiting for the moment when the government steps all over, say, a Muslim group on an issue related to some of these things. That's going to be a very interesting legal situation. So he's on to something real, and journalists can profit from reading his essay, but he's totally wrong that this is just an evangelical issue. One of the things I would stress is that if anything, and we may have listeners today that would be upset about this, I would argue that because of their rather radically individualistic form of faith, most modern evangelicals, with their priesthood of the believer, I can interpret the Bible for myself, approach to Christianity, this is a very modern form of Christianity, they may have less trouble getting to a modernized faith, and we're seeing that beginning to emerge in kind of the evangelical left, they may have less trouble getting to a modernized faith than members of truly ancient churches or ancient traditions that have to reconcile changing their moral worldview with the early church fathers or with Jewish tradition or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Some of the more ancient churches, which are not mentioned in his articles at all, may find it even harder to change to fit the mores of, you know, of a an emerging postmodern kind of individualistic, radicalized, moral libertarian culture that we live in now. Evangelicals, heck, you know, there may be the occasional independent evangelical church that votes next week that, you know, hey, the Bible is wrong on marriage and sex. And that one independent megachurch could flip its views overnight and feel thoroughly evangelical in having that vote, right? Because they're all following the Holy Spirit's leading in their life. I don't think journalists get how the forms of these churches and the traditions of how they look at doctrine and the ancient and legal and theological and doctrinal roots of their moral positions, I don't think journalists get any of that. They think it's all politics and that this is all just about the religious right refusing to go along with what the society wants to do now with gay marriage.
So whose viewpoint is being represented there? Is this how our politicians tend to think about this? I'm not going to ask whether they believe it because they read it in the papers, but do you think this is how our politicians, our lawmakers generally tend to think, even those who are pro-evangelical, even those who are pro-concerns that religious people do have? Do they share this particular blind spot?
I honestly don't know. I do think that for cultural reasons, there are a lot of journalists who just think of evangelicals as, what was it, uneducated and easy to lead astray, poor, uneducated, and relatively easy to sway. I think there are journalists who have that stereotype of evangelical culture. And perhaps because they know liberal Catholics or perhaps because they know liberal Jews or whatever, they have trouble imagining that there are debates within those religious groups about how to apply ancient tenets to the modern world. And that the Roman Catholic bishops right now, with their emphasis on religious liberty, are not somehow getting into bed with evangelical Protestants in some sort of inappropriate way, but actually defending the teachings of their church. They think of Catholics as smart and evangelicals as dumb, or at least they think there are some smart Catholics. And there's a lot of stereotyping going on here. But I think the dominant thing, and you and I have discussed this many times, is there's this old saying that the only true religion in most newsrooms is politics. Politics is the real world. Religion is not a part of the real world. So when religious groups do things that are real, they're only doing it because it's politics. Right? That's an equation.
Finally, then, with about a minute here, Terry, what are the consequences for the future of religion coverage if these concerns shared by many, many different people of a religious persuasion are interpreted by the media as mere evangelical values? 1 minute here, Terry.
Yeah, let me just give listeners something to look for. We're all waiting for the moment when Pope Francis comes out and says something truly definitive, even more than what he's already put in writing, in defense of the Catholic faith on an issue related to abortion or a male priesthood or something like that. And we're going to have to watch the media do this quick turn, and they're all going to say, Pope Francis has changed his mind. Or they're going to have to say, Pope Francis is not the man he seemed to be. When in reality, they're going to need to admit, we haven't been listening to what Pope Francis has been saying, except when he said something we liked, and we have misheard him. Listeners can look for that, because that's going to spin soon. And in effect, he's just defending the very ancient doctrines and truths of Christian faith that a lot of evangelicals are defending at the same time. So does that make Pope Francis an evangelical all of a sudden? We will see.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here again.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to talk with Pastor Steve Shave about Christianity and poverty. We'll also discuss hell with Pastor David Kind, and it's Friday tomorrow, so we're going to play Issues Etc., soundbite of the week. Folks, Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota is committed to the formation of thinking Christians. That's what you want, really, when you send your kid away to a college or a university equipped with strong Christian faith. You want them to emerge there with a better ability to think. What, after all, is education about? In a world where education has become about merely making you a fit model for your career, making you a good earner, Bethany Lutheran Church in Mankato, Minnesota understands what it means to produce generation after generation of thinking Christians. You can find out more about Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota on the web, blc.edu, blc.edu, or give them a call toll-free, 1-800-944-3066, 1-800-944-3066, Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the divine service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Bethany. Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.